broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Welcome to our podcast. I think we have a really great topic for you today, and I won't delay this any longer, except you know I usually start with what's in my mailbox, and what's in my mailbox is very relevant to today's material. The question is, I think the patient has a stage 2 pressure injury on her coccyx, but the other wound nurse thinks that it's incontinence-associated dermatitis. How do you know the difference? And you know the difference because you have to know a little bit about the history of the patient. So obviously, if it's incontinence, the patient has an episode of incontinence, and the injury is actually typically very, very bright red. And here's the biggest clue. It goes wherever urine goes. So it usually is through the lower perineum, sometimes out onto the thighs. It does not crawl back up against the skin of the sacrum. Very, very seldom, unless the patient is supine. Think about where gravity would pull fluid. So the stage 2 of the coccyx tends to be a single ulcer with a defined edge, where incontinence-associated dermatitis may have 1,000 open wounds. I had a nurse tell me that IAD was stage 2 as many years ago, and I said, then we got to measure every one of them. And she looked at me and she said, there's no way. I said, right, because it's not a stage 2. So generally, you got to know the history and you got to know what the difference in the appearance is. Now, my guest today is going to help explain the significance of that stage 2. I'm very happy to introduce Michelle Depich as my guest today. And what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes is the electronic clinical quality measure. It's actually been around for a while, but it's coming to a hospital near you, right? Whatever the joke is. And it's going to start involving pressure injuries, which is why I asked Michelle to join me today. She's done a tremendous amount of investigating on the topic. So welcome, Michelle. I hope you find this enjoyable. And if not, too bad, we're recording you anyway.
Thank you, Joyce. No, I've been looking forward to this. A little bit about me. I am a clinical wound specialist, and I am a self-employed wound care consultant, having retired from industry and still interested in continuing work with NPIP and pressure injury prevention on the board of directors and president-elect. So I'm very honored to be moving forward. I got interested in electronic quality measures. Two things. One, serving on the education committee, when we brought up topics, what's pertinent, what's important, this just was like, what is this? I know what quality measures are. I remember when I worked as a clinician, what we had to report, but then what is this now and what's the push? So I decided that that was going to be my topic and I was going to investigate. And the kind of tangential subject to that is that being a very involved part of our support surface standards initiative, it's the support surface. So that's the partner to our bedside nurse who's going to try and prevent pressure injuries. And I was interested to see how are these two groups going to get together to actually be successful. So that's a little bit about me. I live on the coast of North Carolina. And oddly enough, today we're having a heavy snowfall. I am watching snow pour down onto the grass outside. It's unbelievable.
Well, I hope it's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. I don't have to go out, so it's very pretty.
Right. So can you explain to the audience, I know that there are people listening who have never heard of this ECQM and yet should be aware of it because it's coming soon. In fact, it's already in your hospitals now, but you define it for them and explain what the significance or the importance of it is.
So it started back in 2013, CMS recognized that it had to streamline the way it was bringing data in. And so what they started with was an electronic program. And so an ECQM is an electronic clinical quality measure. and it measures specified standards. And the standards that we thought of that were patient safety standards that will be reported into our EHR. So IT is a very heavy component of this. And as bedside nurses, you wouldn't know what's going on behind the scenes. It's the cyberspace back there. So what hospitals have done is they have met CMS criteria for specified software programs so that the CMS computer system can come in and pull data. They're looking for a large shift in data transportation so that hospitals can write, send scripts out. Physicians can see in different clinics how the patient's record is. It's all about interoperability, and this ECQM became an initiative. So they looked at the quality measures that we were all reporting on by hand and giving them to the risk manager, who then sat down and compiled the records and went somewhere and did an Excel spreadsheet. And then that Excel spreadsheet went down to somebody in IT who translated it into computer language. And then it was sent off to CMS. So it's now a big deal. And there are multiple programs on the market for hospitals to purchase. We all know about Cerner and Epic. And then there are specific sub programs that need to be attached even to Cerner and Epic to make the language appropriate. It's not new. Like I said, started in 2013. So it's just an electronic version of what we used to put down on paper. And they're going to pull it directly from where we chart.
So Michelle, the obvious question then that the audience has is, wait a minute, you're tapping into my electronic record directly, and I don't have a chance to clean it up through the risk management people. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Because they call, CMS calls that the validation process. So they're going to come back, and let's say I submitted that I only had 5 pressure injuries for the whole year. They may come back and look at the medical records in our hospital system to see if I really had 5 pressure injuries for the whole year.
So there's really going to be a huge push to make the data that we as bedside providers put in a record accurate from the get-go, correct? Yeah. I mean, it has to be.
It has to be. Yes. Yes. It's a nightmare. I know that people were, as I was reading this, and I talked to some other nurses, and I called and talked to some other people who knew more about this than I do. And I talked to an IT person, and she said, it wasn't so bad when we were doing, CAUTI and CLABSI, because that was a pretty simple, straightforward. This has, putting pressure injuries in, has so many moving parts. Because the first one is, we've got the episode of care can begin in the emergency room. And what the record is going to pull is the patient greater than 18 years old? The patient's been admitted. They don't care that you hold them in the emergency room for 3 days. They got admitted on a certain date at a certain time. That's the start of their episode of care. So during that episode of care, and they get discharged 5 days later, if they developed a stage 2, a stage 3, a stage 4, a deep tissue pressure injury, or an unstageable pressure injury, it doesn't matter. It's if they do, because it's going to count as one. More than likely, somebody will develop a stage 2. So that's been in the record that person developed a stage 2 during this episode of care or this hospitalization. So that goes into your numerator. That's the one. Then we begin to build more into what they call a quarterly reporting numerator.
Well, holy cow.
Yeah.
Just to reflect on what it used to be that hospital-acquired pressure injury was considered reportable in some states and non-payable at the federal level, you know, if you're a Medicare recipient, if it happened during the admission, and the admission did not include the ER. And today, I mean, I know our hospital is on red a lot, and people sit in the ER on carts. And sometimes we transfer them to hospital beds when we know that they're going to be admitted and we have that room. But starting in the ER really changes things to me.
And
I'm going to present to you a theory that a patient comes into the ER and remains in their street clothes until they're admitted to the unit sometime later. When they're admitted in their street clothes, there is no complete skin assessment done of that patient. So would you recommend that hospitals start teaching their ER staff to examine the skin of patients being
Yes.
admitted?
Yes, definitely. I know pushback I always received when trying to develop programs was, we're the ER, we save lives. We're not worried about the skin right now. We're worried about the life. Well, now they got to worry about the skin. And so my call to action to on this subject is, not only do they need to educate the ER, when the patient's admitted, the patient's got to come out of their clothes and they have to do a full skin assessment. And then pressure injury prevention, turning, repositioning, all of those things need to be initiated. So that means new equipment downstairs. It maybe means new stretchers down there, or new or beds automatically, because how are they going to do pressure injury prevention? Offloading of heels, but the clothes have to come off and they have to do the same assessment that the nurse would have done up at stairs at the bedside.
I need to remind our listeners that last year I recorded a podcast with a nurse from Johns Hopkins who worked on a pressure injury prevention that started in the ER. If this is something that is blowing your socks off right now, thinking that this is coming, you may want to listen to her recording. It does say the emergency room and pressure injury prevention. But let me get back to my guest here. So, Michelle, I guess the other piece of this is the old record, the old way of non-payable hospital-acquired pressure injuries were all the full thickness injuries. And stage two wasn't a reportable injury. I know that the audience doesn't know this, but NPIAP wrote a letter off to CMS at the start of this program saying, please do not include stage twos because there's too many errors in the recording of stage two. My mailbox commentary at the beginning of this is just an example of how many people get stage twos mixed up. Tell me your advice for hospitals that are trying to clean up, not changing it from a pressure injury to incontinence-associated dermatitis. We're not going to ask that they make the record false, but how do we clean up the accuracy of the documentation by the nurses? Because physicians don't do this documentation.
A couple of suggestions. I think a picture, you know, really says a thousand words. And so truly, I believe we're going to need to educate the wound care team leaders with pictures and pictures and pictures of what are all the different stage twos, especially what does a stage two look like on darkly pigmented skin? Because even CMS, in reading this, CMS has cited almost the entire clinical practice guideline for the prevention section as part of their references. And they lined it out. And then they have acknowledged that darkly pigmented skin is the most problematic because they've done some pulling of data and realized that pressure injuries, there's a lot more pressure injuries in darkly pigmented skin than there were in lighter skin. So all I can think of is that we're going to really need to put pictures on the edge of the computer. This is a stage two. This is what a stage two looks like. And so maybe diagnostic differential in our education programs. That's going to be key because I know just like you do that stage two is really the hardest for people and they just don't quite get it all the time. And many of the hospitals don't let nurses stage. Well, now they're going to have to educate them enough to make nurses stage so nurses can stage because it's got to go in. It's a time base.
So the admission will start at the time the patient comes in the hospital, including the emergency room. Stage twos will be included.
Right.
So your advice is valid. Take the clothes off patients who are being admitted and examine for the presence of existing wounds now when they come in, so they do not get counted against you in this electronic reporting. So is this a mandatory program, or how much time do we have to get all this done?
Well, right now, pressure injuries are one of 15 quality measures. So if you think there's a pool of 15 for this year, there are six required. Three are mandated by CMS, and that's going to be, they have to report on safe use of opioids. Then they also have to report on cesarean birth, and they have to report on severe obstetric complications. And so they can choose out of the other 12, any other three quality measures that they would like to report on. So pressure injuries is in the pool of, yes, you can select us now in 2025. However, come 2028, it is part of the mandated group. So you will have to report on it then. And what happens is you report on it for four quarters in 2028. The data is sent off to CMS. There's a year for CMS to look at the data and pull it together. Then it sends it back to the hospital to say, you give a chance to review this. Is this accurate? And then they pay you on it in 2030.
Got it. So we do have a little bit of time, but I presume your guidance would be let's get started sooner than later.
Yes, yes.
What do you think the biggest hurdle is going to be in an acute care hospital? What do you foresee that we should be able to warn our listeners to pay attention to this?
I think the first hurdle is going to be at my suggestion is for hospitals that have a large population of darkly pigmented skin, they may want to look at early detection devices so that that can be a component in their emergency room to help them augment or ensure that this heel doesn't hit the bed. And that's what we need to look at. They're talking about beds. They need to look at, are they putting their patient on the most appropriate support surface for what that patient needs? Then we need to talk to the OR, the perioperative area. Patients come down, they sit on a stretcher for how long, and legs extended up in the back. We're getting shear on the sacrum. Then they go to the OR and they're in a supine position. And then they come out. And just for convenience, we have them in a supine position again. So perioperative area really needs to rethink how they're managing the patient. And that's an area that hasn't been really strong in pressure injuries, better than the EED, but not a strong area either, because they're time-based and that's how the hospital makes their money. So we got to give them the best equipment. So when they pull something off the wall, they've got the best equipment underneath that patient, because there's not going to be a long line of critical thinking to let them deduce which one they should have chosen. So again, the ED and the OR may be looking at what's the best equipment for this environment that we can give them. Out on the floor, they may be able to have some decision-making. But what do they need to do? You and I were just talking about it. We have to figure out how to make them stellar in stage twos, because stage twos happen all the time. I think the other thing that we need to make sure that we look at is if they've got a lot of travelers, we need to make sure that those travelers understand that they need to function at the same level. You can't use the excuse, well, I'm a traveler. There is no excuse for being a traveling nurse. You are going to have to come into the same education. We need to make sure everybody gets the education. We're going to have to repeat the education. I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be pictures posted everywhere until a point where they can point something out and know that, oh, that's a stage two for sure. I know that is.
What do you think the role of the electronic health record would be? So the Epic, Cerner, Allscripts, Teams, they could help us with this too by providing right-click information. So in the stage two box, you could right-click it and up would come the information.
Excellent. Yes, I agree. They already know how this is used, how the terminology is used. So they could come back to each of the organizations that they provide service for and come up with a, you know, here's a right click, up comes some pictures, up comes a better definition. And I think we actually need to maybe break this down a little bit and not just use the buttocks for stage two, but we got to look at a stage two on an elbow. We need to look at a stage two on a heel. What's a stage two look like if I have it on my chin? So Epic and Cerner could easily be huge partners. Again, this requires the facility to reach out to Epic or Cerner and ask them to come and provide some care or provide some additional program complements to their integumentary system.
Yeah, I do think that we should partner with our electronic health record. It seems like we fight with them a lot, at least we fight internally trying to make sense of the record. It may be time to join hands and work together in unison to make this work. So I'm fearful that we may have scared the pants off of people that had no idea that this electronic clinical quality measure was even on the horizon. Thank you for sharing your insight and in where you might start to do the changes, the ER, the OR, general pressure injury prevention for sure, but certainly detecting pressure injury that's present on admission would be a huge asset, particularly in the darkly pigmented patient. So what's your final capstone thought? Should a hospital voluntarily start this process early and sort of learn by their mistakes, or should they wait to see what the other hospitals see and recommend? What's your best advice?
I think if you want to learn, it's always easier to learn from your mistakes. So you know, this is going to be a huge change. The hospitals have to meet on quality measures. They have a total of 60 points that they need to meet. And this all becomes money on the table. So they could lose up to 25% of their Medicare return, which is huge for some hospitals. Or they could have, you know, a 9% increase, which would be wonderful for the hospitals.
So when you attach money to any kind of initiative, people pay attention. I think your advice is solid, and I'm going to bring it back to the listeners to take this to your team, take this to your wound care team, take this to your direct line managers and see what their plan is. Talk to risk in your facility and see if they certainly are aware of this, but you know, how can we bring the wound care team in line with an electronic clinical quality measure that represents the work that we actually do to keep skin intact? Well, I'm going to close this session off by thanking Michelle Deppich for being my guest. I know that she scared the pants off of some of you with the information on this measure. It is not optional. It will be mandatory soon enough for us to get our boots on the ground and get moving. I also want to thank Courtney Smith. Courtney is the lady behind the scenes who makes this program come to life and be available for you. I'll see you next time on the podcast. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.